You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
This is Solange Ellis, founder of Stable Riding, and this is the August 2025 episode of Stable Riding with Solange, part of the Horses in the Morning. I am here the fourth Tuesday of every month to talk to you all about the rider and how we can make ourselves better in the saddle. Coming up on today's show, you're going to hear a little bit about how this podcast came about, followed by an interview with a real-world stable rider. This episode's stable rider is Krista, who completed the 2022 Mongolian Derby. Krista will tell us all about her riding journey and amazing experience flying across the steppe. Are you interested in being a stable rider? Each episode will close with me giving a riding tip and some rider homework to keep you learning and riding between now and next month's episode. For this first episode, I have founder of the Horse Radio Network, Glenn, with us, who's also host of Horses in the Morning.
Hey, Solange, thank you so much for doing this. We're glad to have you here.
I'm very excited. I think this is going to be a really great time.
So I met Solange at Equine Affair this year in Ohio. Ashley and I were there, and we met you. We had you as a guest on the show, right?
Sure did, yep.
And then we got chatting, and then it was actually Ashley's idea who said, you know, for one of these Tuesday or Thursday episodes on Horses in the Morning, we've never done an episode that's solely about the rider. We've
Correct.
Done a ton about training horses, but we've never done anything that's solely about the rider. And I'm so glad you're here because that's your specialty.
It is. That is what I have dedicated my life to. I tell people that I have dedicated my life to stabilizing riders everywhere I go.
And we also have a mutual friend that listeners of the show will recognize, and that's Frankie Lovato.
Yes, I adore Frankie. I have I have an entire herd now of equisizers.
How many do you have? Do you have the record of the most number of equisizers?
I just got a fifth one.
Oh my God, you do.
My students all gathered together for my birthday, which was also my 25th anniversary of having my business. And they purchased me a custom equisizer special for myself.
Old enough to have a 25th anniversary of your business.
Well, I dropped
out. You must have started when you were 10.
I started when I was 15.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
And started breaking horses for a living when I was 15. So that was sort of the beginning of my horse career was 15.
So you use the equisizers in your instruction, right?
I use the equisizers all the time for everything. So with my stable riding system, I have a dedicated space on my property here on my farm called the Rider Lab. And it includes a lot of tools to help teach riders on. And that includes my herd of equisizers. And I use them to train new riders who've never been on a horse before, so they know how to interact with their tack. Advanced riders who are preparing for a big event, like the Mongol Derby and Gaucho Derby riders. I teach a lot of mounting lessons. Riders who are turning to riding after a long break, a lot of rider rehab, whether they had a riding injury or some other type of injury or surgery. The equisizers really allow me to do what I do. I couldn't do what I do without the equisizers.
Yay, Frankie.
I know.
So, and you have all different colors? All different breeds of equisizers?
I have all different colors. So far, they all feel like geldings to me, but I can't say that one won't be a mare. I tend to name them after beloved past school horses and hunt horses that like earn their way into horsey heaven, carrying people and teaching them how to ride. So,
well, if somebody doesn't know what an equisizer is, Frankie Lovato is a jockey, that had a very successful jockey that when he retired started making these. Just look up equisizer and you'll see all kinds of pictures and videos of them. They're in almost every jockey room and every track in America has equisizers for the jockeys to kind of warm up before they head out. And then people like you and then, you know, a little bit of everybody, riding schools and people at home have equisizers.
People have them in their living rooms. Mounted police people use them. Polo cages use them. Vaulting schools use them. And then they've been in movies and TV productions. So they're on like some movie sets, which I think is also really fascinating.
Good job, Frankie. All right. Frankie was a regular guest of ours years ago. When we first started the show, probably 14 years ago, Frankie would come on all the time when it would be Kentucky Derby time and stuff like that. And I noticed he's been posting a lot of his old, like when he first started being a jockey pictures, that 17 years old winning
Which
pictures.
Which are so cool to see.
They are. You know? I didn't recognize him. I got to try to look closely at his face. I was like, I would not have known that was Frankie. Well, so obviously this show is going to be focused on the rider. One of the things I like that you're doing on this show is you're actually going to be giving tips and homework, stuff that people can try when they, you know, before they listen to the next episode.
Yes. Yep. Kind of a stable riding system is all about simple, stable, and sustainable. So I try to keep the instruction as easy and clear as possible so it can even impact a rider over a medium leg podcast.
Yeah, because obviously you can't show them doing this. So, but I know you well enough now to know you'll be very good at explaining it so people can actually go out and give it a try.
100%.
We did that. We had another very popular show called Equine Clicker 101, which was 50 episodes on the different things you can do with clicker training. And she would do that. She would have instructions at the end that people would go out and actually do while listening. So I love this idea.
I think it's fabulous.
I'm very excited to have you aboard. You're going to be here, as you said, the fourth Tuesday of every month as part of Horses in the Morning, but you're also going to have your own podcast feed, and that is called Stable Riding with Solange. So you can go to your podcast player and subscribe to that if you just want to hear Solange. If you're one of Solange's fans and you don't want to hear Jamie and I on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on Horses in the Morning, then you can do that. You can go subscribe to her feed directly, or you can listen on Horses in the Morning. Either way is fine. Welcome aboard, and have a great show.
Thank you so much. Oh my goodness, Krista, I'm so excited to hear from you. Listeners, this is Krista, one of the incredible riders who completed the Mongol Derby in 2022. Krista, thank you so much for being on the Stable Riding Podcast today.
Absolutely. I'm very honored for the invite. Thank you.
The second I knew that I wanted to talk to a Mongol Derby rider, I instantly went, I'm going to ask Krista.
I also would just like to talk about it. I think that's every rider.
Well, it's such, a once in a lifetime incredible adventure. How could you not want to share it, especially with other people in the horse community? I mean, it's really wild what you accomplished.
A lot of fun. It did take a while to like process all the thoughts. So this is a good timing after we just,
glad.
Yep.
Okay. I know we all have a million questions about your Mongol Derby experience, but we only have one podcast. So I'm going to try to keep it simple and start at the beginning by asking you, how old were you when you started riding?
I would like to believe I was riding by the age of 5, but my mom would like to tell me that I was older.
Okay.
But every year for my birthday, so I didn't grow up with horses. No one in my family. My mom rode when she was young, but mm-hmm. no one current day rode. So I don't really know where the bug came from, but I just remember never not wanting to ride horses. And I started riding every year for my birthday. So any money I could save or any birthday gift I could ask for, it was always to go ride horses.
And how funny is that? It's really like you're born with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's like almost genetic. You're born wanting to be on a horse and around horses. And then some people feel the exact opposite. And they're not born with it.
And I just wanted to go fast and have the biggest horse. There's this one horse, just, like my mom would say 7, probably.
Yeah.
We went on a trail ride. My dad asked how the ride was. I'm like, well, we didn't gallop. We didn't go fast. So the cowboy put me in the round pin and just cracked the whip. And I just had the best day ever. I'm sure my dad was not terrified. He knew that's what I wanted to do.
You were already ready for the Mongol Derby at 7. It was pre-written in the stars.
Fast and crazy.
So what kind of riding did you do as you were like a teen and a young adult? Did you get to ride through your teenage years? Did you have to take a break like for college? A lot of riders have to take like a break. What happened in that part of your life?
Yeah, so got my first horse in 7th grade. I just did a bunch of trails. Mm-hmm. Worked at a trail riding place that they would always put the young kids on the back end just to make sure everybody was falling in line and there were mm-hmm. no stragglers. Mm-hmm. And started Pony Club right away, but I did the games, and a lot of people don't talk about the games. So it's fast relay races. How quick can you get across the finish line? Oh, yeah. And the only rule is your butt has to be in the saddle. So I did regionals.
Preparing for the Mongol Derby, man.
Yeah. So I had an Arab saddlebred cross, about 14-3 hand pony. I loved him. He was wild. We could do the poles in 11 seconds, which was phenomenal. So we did regionals twice, nationals once. And then in ninth grade, I flew up and competed in the U.S. Games team and made first alternate. And that's the year we competed in Australia, and it's the first time in like 5 years that the first alternate did not get to go. So I never actually competed at the US level. I was on the team, but first alternate.
How did I not know this about you until this podcast? This is the first time I'm hearing this story.
Oh, really? Yeah, we had to fly up in ninth grade and try out in Rochester, New York, spend a couple of days with host families, and everybody just brought crazy horses. Mm-hmm. And you just kept trying to show the judges that you were capable of not making it, of getting on the team. And from my ninth grade memory, the Australian horses were some of the wildest and fastest for all of the worlds. It was fun. And then got a new horse who was a saddlebred, just did trail riding and dressage. I always wanted to jump, but he wasn't into jumping. So he was great in hunter paces and out in the woods like that. But in a stadium jumping, that's a no-go. Went to college and sold him to someone that could give him an excellent retirement home. Got another saddlebred who was crazy. Loved them. I dabbled in the saddle seat world, but I never competed. I just got to watch professionals do that. I did take a couple years off, but it was after college, and it was in my mid-career professional stage.
Right.
Just didn't have enough time to not be a weekend warrior. And I always just get a horse that needs more than a Saturday, Sunday deal.
Correct. Yeah, I get it.
So did a couple years in Japan and then moved back to the States and like just dove debt deep in horse stuff as soon as I moved back.
Now, when did you first hear about the Mongol Derby and what made you decide to apply?
Yeah, interesting. So I lived in Japan for a couple of years, and on the way over to Japan, I have two big shepherds. So my mom drove with me to Seattle, and then I took a plane from there so they didn't have to go across the U.S. Mm-hmm. in another plane. And we were at my aunt's house, and this documentary of Mongolians came on, and you always hear that they're the expert horsemen.
Right.
And they talked about eagle hunting and how you had to capture an eagle. And my mom saw my eyes get really big. And I remember her saying, like, you're not going to Mongolia. Just stop this.
She already knew.
Yeah, this was 2018. So I moved to Japan. 2 years later, 2020, COVID is locking everybody down. And then there was a light restriction. So my friends and I booked a horse back adventure on a beach in Mirakaigan. Mm-hmm. And there the Japanese were telling us that they like to go to Mongolia to go trekking. And a friend that I ended up competing with, Mary, she had a friend that competed in this thing called the Mongol Derby. So I went home that night and Googled, watched the 3-minute promo video, and was like, sold. Mm-hmm. And Mary and I, from that moment on, just were hyper focused on, we were going to do this crazy thing called the Mongol Derby. We were going to ride semi-feral horses forever, how long they'll let us ride them. And, so we applied in October of 2020. Mm-hmm. Or a little bit earlier. We originally got accepted for the 21 race, but COVID deferred everything, which led me to
remember that.
Yeah. So 2022. So I had 2 years to train, which was really nice.
That is a luxury.
Yeah. But that 3-minute video sold me on sign me up.
Good marketing.
Yeah.
So let's talk about how we met. Do you remember our meet cute? Do you remember how we met each other?
Yes, I do. So I was training. I've never trained harder for anything in my life. I'm sure my job would want me to dedicate this much effort. But I was training with Stevie Delahunt out west, and she's an amazing horsewoman, plus a coach, mm-hmm. mental coach as well. Mm-hmm. And she was like, Krista, you know, you might benefit on going to see my friend Solange. And I had a new feral stallion baby as well.
Yes.
Fell off a couple times. The writing was on the wall that I was not going to make it Mongol Derby. And so I remember be bopping into your barn at like 6:30 in the morning.
Yes.
Super excited to train. And within 30 minutes, I fell in love with your style, your attention, your communication style. And then immediately was like, can you go to Egypt with me in 2023?
I know. You came for, I think it was 2 days. Remember, you came for a 2-day intensive.
Yes.
For the Derby. And I immediately put you on horses and I'm standing in the middle of my indoor teaching you drinking coffee. And you're like, I'm going to go to Egypt for my birthday and ride Arabs in the Desert. Do you want to come? And I wanted to look at you and go, you have not seen me on a horse. I might be a terrible rider. You don't know. Maybe I just stayed at a Holiday Inn last night, you know? And I just took a sip of my coffee and I was like, yeah, I think I do.
And it was the one time probably that I was being super selfish with my own personal trip that I wanted to go ride fast Arabians and not worry about anybody or anything. So, So that was our first, I think, like 30 minutes.
Yeah. We had known each other not long at all. And you invited me on like your next trip of a lifetime. And I was like, yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah. And it was definitely in May and I raced in the August race. So right around the corner.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
I
was very sore and never lost my stirrup again, except for on Frajala, the Arabian in Egypt.
And I lost my stirrup like 5 minutes before. And I looked at you and I was like, wow, I lost my stirrup. But and you're like, you jinxed me.
those horses, man, 3, 2, 1, go. They just gone.
They were very fast. I was very excited to have you come to my facility because the lab was still kind of new and I was just sort of building it. And I had just gotten in my Equisizer like a couple months prior and just gotten in the Mighty Bucky a couple months prior. So it was really exciting to me to be able to apply those tools with my like budding burgeoning system to a Mongol Derby rider. And you were just a dream to train. You trained so well and rode so beautifully. And it was so fun to watch you on your Mongol Derby adventure.
Well, about the lab, I think Mighty Bucky, you didn't ask me this question, but I'll toss it in there. Mighty Bucky was probably my favorite because we rode Mighty Bucky on day one and then we rode Mighty Bucky on day two. Mm-hmm. And Mighty Bucky became a feral stallion on day two. And the significant difference in just one day.
Well, and for the listeners who are like, what's a Mighty Bucky? It's a professional bull riding barrel. So it's a big barrel with a handle on it and it bucks and rears and you can move it very slowly because another human manipulates it. So you can move it very slowly and gently. And I've used it to like show people how they can move their hips and this is what a canter is going to feel like. But you can also, if you're strong enough, you can really buck it a lot. And when I purchased the Mighty Bucky, the lady's on the phone, she's like, do you want the Mighty Bucky or the Mighty Bucky Extreme? And I was like, the Mighty Bucky Extreme. So that's what I have, which also swivels a little bit. So it twists.
It definitely swivels.
It twists and it spins and it bucks and rears. And it's a fabulous tool in the lab. It's heavy and hard to move, but it works really well and has been, I think, like you said, a cornerstone of a lot of the Mongol Derby riders whom I've trained lab time because you can just buck and buck and buck and buck as much as you want.
It was wonderful. Mm-hmm. I have so many good things to say about the lab. That one jumps out. And then the Equisizer, I never understood how to, this sounds bizarre. I've ridden with top trainers. Mm-hmm. I could say that top trainers. And I guess I never was as connected with my seat bones to the horse and learning my canter lead through my seat.
Yeah.
Through that.
I remember you having that breakthrough. Yeah. I remember it.
I was riding really, way too stiff.
It was really, really very fun to watch. I had a great time. So as you know, because you've experienced it, my stable riding system is designed for all riders. It's non-breed specific, non-discipline specific. And this means that I get a lot of non-traditional riders who come in to the system because they're looking for something a little different, because maybe they're doing something a little different like the Mongol Derby riding. So you've already told us a little bit about how the non-traditional instruction of the lab and stable riding helped with your very successful completion of the Mongol Derby. But is there anything else you want to add about how the stable riding system helped or how other riders can feel maybe empowered to try out some of the non-traditional instruction out there because it might really benefit them?
Yeah, I was thinking about this, and I think maybe last year or sooner, my show days are merging. Mm-hmm. I took my wonderful Irish sport horse into the warm-up arena, and he was an angel. He was pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then I, bebopped over to the show ring, and he was perfect. And I go down center line, and all of his energy is about to combust. And mm-hmm. it just was day and night. And I immediately was like, this horse is going to try to throw me in the middle of this class mm-hmm. in my training one test. First time ever doing training one on him at a show. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, we're going to ride it out.
Yep.
We're just going to ride it out.
Yeah.
I immediately remembered some of the phrases you taught me, where my shoulders need to be, where my hips and my chest and my heels and my toes. And I'm like, yeah. I'm a ride. And I'm going to stick this out.
Yeah.
And, we're coming around on one of our 20 meter circles and he just rears and does a 160.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, sir, we don't do that here. And he also tried to crow hop a couple times in the canter.
Yes.
I'm like, no, sir, we're going this way.
Yeah.
And I remember coming out of the arena and a few people were like, wow, like I would have stopped the class
right.
and I would have just not finished.
Right.
Lucky me, I get to ride this horse all the time, but every day is a different personality. But I remember thinking if I hadn't have been to your lessons and your clinics and continue to ride with you, even right. after the Mongol Derby, mm-hmm. I would not have been as confident or quick on the memory of where I needed to be. I can't just be perfect up and down in my, parallel foot to the ground. And
right.
I just had to get into a safe position. We finished the test. Did not get a great score, but we finished the test. And then later we did another class and he was great. So I think for me, it's at that moment where you're doing something and you're like, I don't know how my horse is going to, a plastic bag goes through the arena.
Oh yeah, totally.
Happens all the time mm-hmm. at barns that things happen or a horse trailer pulls in next to your arena and your horse spooks. So for me, it's those moments preparing you for those one-offs that we all dread and you just don't know what's going to happen, but allows you to stay confident to where you're like, nope, we're just going to keep doing this.
Well, I loved about the way you described the interaction that you had with your horse was you felt like your horse was going to have a big feeling. You felt an emotional moment coming with a young horse who's in a new place, who's doing something new. And you went, oh, we're going to keep going. I'm going to ride this and I'm going to calmly and effectively say, we don't do that here. And then redirect them and put them back online. And while I don't really do a lot of horse training anymore, what the stable riding system does for riders is allow them to be stable enough in their body that they can use their aids clearly and patiently and empathetically when their horse does have a big feeling, as opposed to going, we just have to stop because I can't handle this, or I'm just going to monkey cling and pray.
No, I paid a lot of money and it was a schooling show. So the bell didn't get rung on me we just keep going. And we did a 30 mile endurance race on him. I did in November, same thing in my jump saddle because mm-hmm. I felt most secure in my jump saddle.
Yes.
And so we did a full 30 mile race, vet checked, cleared, everything was perfect. And he led most of the ways. Definitely in my safety position quite often through that ride.
Yes,
and with a lot of posting.
This year's Mongol Derby, Krista, just completed. And that makes me want to ask you, what did you learn from the stable riding system that directly impacted your Mongol Derby experience and was something that you had happen on the horse frequently and you were able to access some of that training, but also something that you brought home and continued with and something that we could share for our listeners if they want to be able to have like a concrete tip or skill or something they can apply to their riding? Because at the end of the day, we're all riders on horses.
Yeah, I would. So I would relate it to, like I mentioned earlier, this is something that I trained more than I've ever trained for in my life from prepped. Yeah. You can go find a good raincoat and try your raincoat out in the shower. You can go try your stirrups out and stuff and, or other like riding pants. But for me, the tactically staying on the horse was very critical. Mm-hmm. And I was always losing my stirrups. And I remember when I did my interview with you on the phone before I came. So you were prepared for like what I needed to customize. I sent you videos. You're like, do you lose your stirrups a lot? And I'm like, you know, I do. In the Mongol Derby, you hear horror stories about marmot holes and people flipping over.
Like, it's like a really big groundhog, right?
Yeah, they're like red.
Is that
like,
what it is? Like a prairie dog?
They're smaller. They're like, yeah, they're like between a prairie dog and a, like a little rat.
And they dig holes.
Massive.
Right.
Holes.
Because everyone's talking about the marmot holes all the time in relation to the Mongol Derby. And that's what I imagine. I imagine like a really devious groundhog hole.
And like you can sort of see them, but there's one horse on day one when I talk about how to me fox hunting relates to the Mongol Derby, mm-hmm. is you're just constantly going through holes at one point. And I had one horse that would jump over the holes and you have no clue. But so effective use of my stirrups. When you and I did our 2-day intensive, mm-hmm. I've only once lost my stirrups since then.
Yeah.
But it's so critical in the Mongol Derby because when the horse is at a fast speed, and we also taught me how to canter in a very good cowboy type, what I would say cowboy, outrider type position where you're not going down. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many times I rode a horse that ate dirt at a gallop. To where there, I was told by friends who've raced, when your horse hits the hole, try to stay out of their face. They'll climb back up. It's like they never did it, but you need to stay out of it. Well, the only way you're going to do that is if you're using your stirrups effectively and your body in is alignment with that position and you're not pitched forward. I came into horse station 9 and the vet there was like, be careful when you leave the horse station. The last 3 riders all fell. into holes. And this is all at a gallop. This isn't at like a little cute walk and trot. This is at a full speed gallop. And
y'all,
you don't have
fast
any control when you're leaving that horse station. Your goal is to go. My horses fell constantly in holes. And I would say that I'm very proud, like probably one of my two proudest moments in the Mongol Derby, my mounting skills. I got on quick and swift, never tripped over the bag, two marmot holes and not falling forward. So I never came off of any horse during the Derby. And I had there's a famous photo in my year where 2 people both were off leaving the horse station.
Right.
And then like fast forward to just this past horse show a couple of months ago, I'm in the warm-up arena doing a Derby, which is stadium jumping mixed with cross country. Mm-hmm. So we're in a grassy warm-up arena and I'm just trotting. My horse is a little opinionated. So I'm like in my early stage of be prepared, use your stirrups appropriately. They're a tool. They're your aid. They're going to keep you safe. Mm-hmm. And my horse, his face hits the ground and everybody in the warm-up arena stops. My mom freaks out. And like a trainer was on the ground coaching and she's like, was there a hole? I'm like, there better be, or I shouldn't be competing today.
Right.
So we circle back and there sure enough is a decent size, like hole in the ground.
Yeah.
And if I hadn't been using my stirrups like you taught me, I would have come off and warm up with my horse.
Well, and the Mongol Derby is such an extreme version of you're going across this open, you know, plain and you can't always see these holes. And everybody knows there's marmots everywhere and the horses are traveling so fast. But everybody's horse at some point in time trips a little bit. Right. That's a universal horse experience, especially if we have trail riders and fox hunters, like you referenced before, a tree root or a slippery crossing or a little bit of mud, or maybe they're just distracted because they're thinking about the fly on their butt. And to be able to sit back and get out of their way, quite often they're able to pop their front end up and keep traveling along and not sustain any injury or issue, like the Derby horses who are able to, because, you know, that's their backyard. The Derby horses are used to the marmot holes. Mm-hmm. But if the rider is not accessing their stirrups correctly, it's going to be more difficult for the horse to right themselves. So tripping is one of those like universal happens to everybody that's ever sat on a horse thing. Even if they're doing their best to help balance the horse, sometimes they just get a little bungled up, and being able to be balanced, stable on them so they can be balanced beneath you, is that's one of those really valuable life skills, I think.
Yeah, and I think we're all going to deal with tripping. And if I can, if 8 out of my 10 trips I can stay on, mm-hmm. I'm great. You know, if there's mm-hmm. there's that one time, but if I can kick that statistics out,
yes.
and stay on, that would be fantastic. But and the other part of the Mongol Derby with the use of the stirrups would be downhill bolting, and you don't have any control when you're bolting down a side of a mountain on yeah. a horse that will not let you have contact. If you touch the bit, their nose is in your face. And that's the last thing you want, is for them not to be looking at the ground.
That's unforgiving physics.
Yeah, not good.
And for the listeners who are wondering, how exactly was I able to help Krista have this interaction with her stirrups? My stable riding system uses the 4 factors of riding to help stabilize riders, regardless of their current body position. So the 4 factors are going to be skeletal alignment, weight distribution, grip, and absorption. And I start any interaction with a rider, regardless of their skill level or discipline or breed, with a stability check that just sees if that rider is interacting with their stirrups mechanically as a tool with their leg bone for support. Stirrups can do 3 things for a rider. They provide a frontal support so you don't fall off the front, a lateral support so you don't fall off the side, and you're able to bring your stirrups beneath you and rise up off of them if you want to stand or post or gallop any of your light seat positions. So when Krista came to me, while she'd had been riding in stirrups her whole life, a professional hadn't broken down piece by piece using physics terms exactly how to interact with these stirrups in a way to provide her with that kind of support. So through the time that we spent together using the Equisizer, using the Mighty Bucky, the live horses in my facility, mirrors, green sticks to highlight the vertical line to the ground, I took her through a series of physical exercises that showed her how she can use her stirrups to support her. So if her horse's front end drops out from under her, her shoulders don't go forward, her feet catch her. And that's a big part of my stable riding system, is teaching riders truly how to interact with their stirrups, not just, oh, we'll measure your stirrup length to your arm, and then that's all the information you get. I have a little bit more technique and a little bit more information that helps riders really understand how to use their stirrups for support in something like galloping downhill or tripping, which is what a lot of the Mongol Derby riders encounter on their race. Does that sound accurate, Krista, like what we did together to help you fix your stirrup weight distribution issues?
Absolutely. It's made me finally got to event for the first time in my life officially this year. So I had my 7-year-old out on the course, and they're definitely looky at a couple things. So the mm-hmm. lateral moves saved me mm-hmm. and just really feel so much more balanced and confident in the saddle, to where I can help my horse feel like, oh, she's stable. So I just have to figure myself out.
I'm going to ask you a little bit more about your horse, your current horse right now, Mr. Aspen, who I really adore. But before we move on for the Mongol Derby, I want to talk about this year's race. So it just finished just a couple days ago. And I know that the social media coverage has really gotten so amped up over the last couple years, because I think the technology is better. Like back in the day when Stevie raced, you know, I don't think they had, you couldn't Facebook Live from the step, you know, like technologically, like you can be so more involved now in the race. And did you watch it at all? And did you see like all of the finishers as they came across the line? And it really struck me how the people who won this year kind of came together as a group. And I thought it spoke to some of the, like the camaraderie of that race, and how you really bond with your teammate and the people you ride with.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I definitely watched it. Slightly addicted.
Yes.
It's always fun also when you have someone so I was cheering 2 riders on this year. Super ecstatic. Both of them finished. Mm-hmm. Very happy for them. So glad I never read. Every day I go and look at where everybody's at, who's in the adventure set. What adventure category means you had something go wrong and you could just throw it to heart, you know, like your stirrups break, you know, you lose your gear, you get a stomach virus, anything. So adventure means you're no longer in the competitive status. So I'm always looking at that list, looking at where everybody's at, and then look at, they did nail the marketing this year, the coverage on Facebook.
Coverage was amazing. They did such a huge logistical event that they pull off so flawlessly.
It is. And I loved, started watching it in 2022 with myself. And ever since then I've been watching it. And this year it was really cool to see the 4 riders cross and share that title. And then seeing everybody else come in, and it's, I rode with my friend Mary that I met in Japan, and right. I would never pick a different person to ride with. We spent 10 days together. I wanted to stay on the roads to stay away from Marmot Hold. You know, we compromised between Marmot Hold and roads when it made sense.
Right.
But in 10 days, you know, you build a huge bond with someone. It's essentially from Charleston, South Carolina to Manhattan is the distance we rode in 10 days.
That is 20 crazy.
Different
when you put
horses.
It like that. That is wild.
Yeah. And the meeting people and who you ride with, there were days that we rode with the same people multiple times. Mm-hmm. You help everybody else out. I remember coming across one of the Aussies and his horse just was not moving out. And we had two bolters, which were crazy. Mm-hmm. They just walk and then they bolt when they want. And then they mm-hmm. walk and then they bolt. So we were like, yeah, man, you can join us. But these are bolters, which was great because then his horse was excited off.
It sort of pulled his along. Yeah.
And then he finished up in, the top 10, probably. Mary and I came in at 21st and started the race together, finished the race together. And you see where the competitive nature comes out, but then you also see where people are going to actually help each other.
It is a race and there are rankings, but the vibe that I really get from all the riders who have trained and who have come back and talked to me about it is that it's everyone's so incredibly helpful of each other. It's a very supportive community. You're all out there to have a really great time. And I think that that's a wonderful bond that the race sort of brings all these people together and all these people from all over the world too.
Yeah. We kept the group chat going strong for probably a year and a half.
Mm-hmm. I believe that.
And then lots of connections, and then not just through the race, but training for the race, you meet like you and I.
Yeah,
so you meet exactly. A bunch of fantastic people.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about your current horse and how adorable he is, but also what are your future riding goals? Like, what do you want to do moving forward with your horse life?
Yeah. So 7th grade, watching the fox hunters come through, I was tally-hoeing. And this big, beautiful gray Irish sport horse comes through first field. And I, you know, we're at a staff and I asked the rider, like, what type of breed is this, sir? And he's like this little blonde 7-year-old 7th grader.
Yeah.
And he was like, Irish sport horse. And instantly I was like, I'm going to own a gray one day. And came back from Japan, emailed a amateur trainer friend and said, here's what I want. I want an Irish sport horse, preferably gray, 16-3 hands to event and spicy. I mm-hmm. will never forget the word spicy.
Mm-hmm.
I got that and I got him at 3. He was a stallion. So I sent him off to a natural horsemanship trainer for a couple of months. I went there constantly every weekend. Fantastic person that broke him. And then I always wanted to event. So when I did my PPE, I told the vet, if he can't event, I'm not getting him.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so my goal right now is I love endurance. It's in my blood. I just didn't know it as a kid that's what I should have been doing out on the trails all the time.
Right.
So we did our first 30-mile endurance race in November. That was fantastic. And then now we're trying to competitively do eventing. And we've done our first schooling horse trials a couple months ago. We have a couple, this will be our first show season. We're doing the starter division.
Amazing.
It's giving us both time to adjust to the field and then at
totally.
Home. Yeah. So my goal is just to get out there and have fun. And he definitely seems to enjoy jumping. He was made for it.
He does.
We're finding out the dressage arena is a must, but we can't turn in our jumps if we can't turn in a dressage arena.
Exactly.
So we really need to understand the body movement there.
Yes.
But yeah, that's my goal, is to event with him. I think one day I would love to be able to do a 50 miler on him. I just know that I'm trying to stay focused and not stack too much. So conditioning 25, 30 miles, great for a horse.
Oh yeah.
And then eventually I'll get him on out fox hunting, but I think that's going to be in a year or two, so I don't blow his mind. He's definitely hot.
He's still young, and you've got many, many, many wonderful years ahead of you with him to do all the fun horse things. And it's been a privilege and an honor that you've allowed me to continue instructing you after your Mongol Derby ride. And I get to see you and Aspen grow together and progress together. And he really does love to jump. I have seen it with my own eyeballs. That horse loves to jump.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if he was more with more of a professional, they would already, you know, I just dream like, can Boyd Martin just take my horse? See what he really can do.
Bring him back with a bow on him in a year or two.
I did his clinic in January and he was like, you have a really nice horse. I'm like, thank you. Like a child over here. Love it.
Yeah, but you have a really nice horse.
He's the dream horse. Yeah. But really just being safe and getting out there. And my goal is always the long, you know, I'm out there I want him for the next 10, 15 years, which means I need to be able to ride him for the next 10, 15 years. And any way I can improve and be stable and effective, especially in situations where a deer pops out on the trail and his go-to signature move is to do a spin like an Arabian, but he's not.
Right. But you're up really high.
Yes.
Well, Krista, I had so much fun interviewing you today. I learned some stuff about you that I didn't even know. And I think it really stands out that you truly manifested this lifestyle. You were 7 and you knew what you wanted. You knew you wanted to go fast. You knew you wanted to have fun. You knew from a very young age that you wanted a gray Irish sport horse. And you have committed and worked incredibly hard and gone for it and have thus far achieved all of your really amazing goals. And I cannot wait to see what you do next.
Thank you. Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I'm very blessed and lucky.
Thank you so much, Krista. This was awesome.
Thank you. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, everybody, it's the part of the show where I share my rider tip. So since this is the very first episode of Stable Riding with Solange, I wanted to start with the one single most important thing that I teach all the riders that I ever interact with on the very first day. It's like the foundation of the stable riding system. And I call it the stable position. The stable position is the way that you put your skeleton on your horse's back to keep yourself on if you are beginning to feel unstable in your own body or if your horse moves out from you in a way you didn't expect. So this stable position that I'm going to explain to you will keep you on if your horse spooks or spins or shies or bucks or bolts, or will just help you gain confidence if you're riding along and you don't feel like you're in the best position you could be in. How we perform the stable position is we put our feet in front of us. We put our heels down and we put our feet in front of us enough that if you look past your knee, you'll see your toe. You're going to turn your toes out at a 45 degree angle. And as you put your feet out and in front of you, you're going to widen them a little bit. So I had a rider who called it piece of pizza. She's like, I got to put my feet out like a piece of pizza. This is going to allow you to interact with your stirrups mechanically as a tool for frontal and lateral support. You're going to keep your hands down below your belly button, and you're going to lean backwards from your waist, the amount that puts your shoulders slightly behind you. Think about how bull riders look when they ride at the rodeo. This position will keep you on your horse's back and will also use all of your aids to help tell your horse that you'd like it to slow down and come back beneath you. So for the rider homework, I want you to practice the stable position 10 times each ride. You can do it just walking at the beginning or the end of the ride when you're on a loose rein, because people's initial reaction when the horse moves out from under them and surprises them is to go into the fetal position, where you scrunch your legs up and scrunch your hands up and lean forward from your waist, which sounds like the opposite of the stable position, because it is. So this means that your body's first instinct to curl up is the wrong instinct, because it'll make you fall off your horse. So we want to train you to have new muscle memory. But if you only try and think of it when your horse surprises you a couple times a year, that's not enough repetition for your body to memorize it. So we're going to purposefully practice this position 10 times every ride, even when you're just walking along. Go from your regular riding position into your stable position. Hold it for 5 or 10 strides and then go back to your regular position again. You might find that when you go into the stable position, your horse slows or stops beneath you. And that's okay, because that's partially what your body is communicating with your aids. And if that happens, I just pat him, tell him good horse, pretend like I just wanted him to slow down or stop anyway, and then go back to walking. I promise you that if you can dedicate just a couple of strides every ride to practicing the stable position, when something happens in the real world, you will greatly increase your chance of staying on and communicating calmly to your horse. And that's really worth it. If you're interested to learn more about stable riding, you can visit my website, www.stableriding.us, or you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok as Stable Riding. What I offer through my stable riding program is remote lessons, one-on-one lessons. I offer traveling clinics, and riders often come in to where I'm located in Hinckley, Ohio, and spend multiple days training with me in rider intensives. We are here once a month on the fourth Tuesday of every month. We have our own RSS feed. Just search Stable Riding with Solange in your podcast player, or you can find us on the main Horses in the Morning feed. Until next month, all riders can be stable riders, and a stable rider makes for a happy horse.